So something that I don't freely admit to everybody is that I am, for the first time, getting through the Harry Potter series. All of them.
Oh my gosh.
I'm currently halfway through the fourth book. I don't like reading. We've talked about this.
This is actually a point of pain in our relationship.
I have two books from you.
Yes.
On my coffee table. Haven't touched them.
I know you haven't.
Yeah.
I've committed you several times.
You
will not.
I don't know what it is. But when you do an audio book, because I'm huge into podcasts, that's essentially what an audio book is. It's just this big, long narrative thing.
Yeah.
I am loving it. Turns out Harry Potter is pretty good.
It's a good podcast.
It's a really long podcast. I mean, the fourth book alone is like 20 hours of content.
Gosh.
But anyway, yeah, I'm using Audible and, I'm very much enjoying it. So, I wanted to tell our listeners that we actually have a banner on our website where you can go and if you go specifically through our website and go to Audible and sign up for Audible, then you can get 30 days free. A lot of places you can get 7 days free. You can get a 14-day free trial, but through us, you can get a 30-day free trial of Audible, because then you can try it. You can listen to all 20 hours of the fourth Harry Potter book, and if you don't like it, then you can leave. There's no contract or anything.
So 30 days seems like a lot. Seems like a lot of time to get for free.
Yeah.
Is it because all of the executives at Audible are fans of this podcast?
Every single one of them.
I figured that.
Yeah.
I suspected that. This is proof.
I got a phone call and it was like, hey, we love your podcast. And I'm like, who's we? And it was like, the entire advisory board at Amazon. I was like, that makes sense. I understand.
Amazon?
Amazon owns Audible. You didn't know that?
Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, we jumped all the way to Amazon.
All the time that he's spending on Blue Origin and his penis rocket, he is listening to Nerd Critic.
Turns out he loves Nerd Critic.
He loves Nerd Critic.
And he's like, hey, you know what
we're
going to do?
Every time he takes a Bic to his head, he's listening to Nerd Critic.
He's like, you know what we're going to do for you, CJ? And I'm like, what? And he's like, we're going to give you 30 days free.
30 days free to anybody who listens to Nerd Critic.
The best they can offer.
Man, I feel like the whole point of our intro banter before the actual introduction is just to get to the point where I feel uncomfortable. And then,
has that been a trend?
I don't know. I haven't been keeping track.
It's partially to kind of wake me up a little bit and remind me, oh, we're recording. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So you better feel a little nervous. If you don't feel a little nervous, you might as well not. Wait, what?
I don't feel nervous.
What are you?
It's to wait. Like our, I'm saying the purpose of our opening banter,
sure,
is to wake me up and remind me.
It's a warm up.
Yeah, it's a warm up. It's to remind me that we're recording because I'm very tired, and it has been a very stressful week. So to come in here and turn on a microphone and have to be pleasant is somewhat of an exercise, if you will.
Man, I'm really nervous about this being the opening banter today. How,
why? People know that we're human.
That's true.
We're tired.
No, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But
I'm also trying to put an exclamation point on the amount of effort that we put into this podcast. All right?
Yes, but let's not make excuses for ourselves.
Okay, yeah, no,
we're professional.
You woke up a lot earlier than I did.
Hello, and welcome to Nerd Critic, a podcast about big movies from the dual perspective of critical nerdiness. My name is Jordan.
And I am CJ. Jordan is our studied and credentialed critic.
CJ is our resident nerd wearing his Deathly Hallows button-up shirt over his Superman t-shirt.
Yes, and I have Deathly Hallows socks as well, just to top it all off.
Excellent.
Yes.
Excellent. CJ is nearly always wearing two layers on top. He's always got a t-shirt and a shirt over the t-shirt.
Yeah, because
the style. Yeah. He's rocking the style.
I thought about getting some just plain white undershirts, but I realized how boring that would be. And part of my brand is to wear a nerd shirt underneath my button up.
Yeah.
So
that's true.
I'm sticking with it.
Yeah, and plain white tees is a bad band anyway.
All right. Sure.
So today CJ, today we're talking about Knives Out.
Knives Out.
And I am really... Well, I'm going to stop there for a second.
Well, we went into this movie very excited.
Yes, we were all very excited.
We had our Ryan Johnson spotlight episodes that if you haven't heard, you should go back and listen to, because I think it's pretty good. And we talked about our excitement for this movie.
Yes.
Because the dude doesn't make bad movies.
He doesn't make bad movies. And CJ, has he made a bad movie this time?
Absolutely not.
That was quite a... He cocked his eyebrow. He knew what he was doing. He's teasing y'all. He's teasing you.
No, this movie jumped to the top of my 2019 list.
Oh, yeah.
I really, really enjoyed it.
It's wonderful. All right, so before we talk about all that, I want to just really quickly, above the line, it's easy this week because it's just Ryan Johnson all the way down. He is the writer and the director. There's nobody else on the writing, in the writing credits, and there's nobody else that helped him direct it. I mean, not that there usually is a co-director
involved. Not a lot of people can do that in Hollywood.
But in this case, it is a Ryan Johnson written and directed by, and the cast. Oh, the cast. Let's talk about the cast, CJ. We've got Daniel Craig. Woo. We've got Chris Evans, a.k.a. Captain America. We've got Ana de Armas. We've got Jamie Lee Curtis. We've got Michael Shannon. We've got Don Johnson, who is making a hell of a comeback lately, I have to say. We've got Toni Collette, wonderful. Lakeith Stanfield, who I love with my whole heart. And we have, of course, Christopher Plummer. And then some other slightly lesser known actors, but you'll recognize their faces. Catherine Langford, Jaden Martell, who most notably from the It movies. We'll stop there. I think if we keep going down the list, it's going to get more and more obscure. But it's quite a cast, is it not?
It very much is. I was, like, at the very beginning, I was a little thrown by Daniel Craig's accent. Because you're like, wait a second, no, that's James Bond. But it won me over. And there was not a bad performance. And all of the performances were so, like, they felt like real rich characters. Wonderful cast. Wonderful.
Absolutely wonderful. Just a little bit of background for my experience watching this movie. I don't know if you have any story about your experience watching this movie. It occurs to me that we should maybe make it like a quick feature of the top part of all our episodes on the movie each week, to like just talk about if there's any noteworthy circumstance about watching the movie.
We probably should, because it affects the
Oh, it totally experience. Affects the experience. Yeah. And I'm gonna make a note to myself to talk about this from now
throw
on.
Throw that in there. Okay.
So just throw it in. For this movie, I was with family. My wife and I and son. We were in Washington for a whole week, a little over a week actually, and I had to convince a whole bunch of people to go see Knives Out with me, or I was going to have to go by myself.
You had to convince people?
Well, I had to convince people because when that family is together, they just want to hang out and play games. They don't want to. Sure. They often don't want to necessarily go see a movie.
It's not quality time together if you're in a dark room all staring at one thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, I get
so
that.
So there was a little bit of a sell, but, you know, they were excited to see it. So, you know, it wasn't that hard. And we all went, but we were not – there were no AMCs where we were. And as our listeners may or may not know, we are both AMC A-list
indeed
members.
Indeed.
Which makes movie going really easy and really great.
Especially when you have like four AMCs really close to you.
We are very, very lucky. We couldn't go to an AMC, which means that it was harder to get tickets in advance, which means we didn't get tickets in advance, which means we went on Saturday night and...
Second row.
And first row.
First row, okay.
First row in a theater that was not designed to be kind to first row sitters.
First row center?
First row center, at least.
Okay, all right.
But boy, CJ, it's been a long time since I've been that close to a screen. And it was a tall screen. And it was a painful experience. It was I had neck pain at the end. Like, it was bad. It was like, I mean, every shot looked like it was low angle. it was a hard. That was a learn my lesson and let's not let that happen again moment for me. So I give that context primarily to emphasize how much I liked this movie.
Yeah.
Because I still had a fantastic time, even though it was a bad. It was a bad movie watching position.
Situation.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the family I was with was great, but like the actual seat in the actual theater was not a great thing.
Sure. And you still loved it.
Still loved it.
My Knives Out going experience was I got tickets in advance with AMC A-List with my wonderful wife on a rainy day.
Oh, so it was perfect.
And I was, yeah, we were in my favorite seats. You have your favorite seats? Your favorite seats are in row C. My favorite seats are in row D. So there you go. I was in row D. And it was great.
Well, so you had a magical, perfect experience.
I did.
And I had a challenging experience that was mitigated immensely by the quality of this film. So clearly we are into the spoiler-free section of this podcast. I have received some feedback, by the way, that the time that we spend talking about whether or not we're spoiling the movie is too much. So hereby,
that's fair.
I promise, and CJ promises, to spend less time talking about whether or not we're spoiling the movie and instead just talk about the movie and then give you a simple spoiler alert warning.
And then move on however it goes. Yes. Okay. All right. That's fair. That's good feedback.
Yeah.
Great feedback. So my spoiler-free review of this movie is that this is an incredibly well-written and directed and performed movie, and it does things that are surprising and refreshing, and I cannot recommend going to see it enough. That's all I want to say about it.
You really, honestly, it has a 95% on Rotten Tomatoes, and it also has a 95% audience score. So everybody loves this movie. If you haven't seen it, there's no excuse.
Everybody
loves it. So go see it. Bring your family, bring your friends, and have a dang good time.
Yeah.
Because it is great. And bring your knives. I have nothing else to add to that.
Okay, so now we're going to jump into the...
We're going to spoil it for you.
Spoilers.
Yes. Spoilers. So,
I got distracted by a thought that I had, which was I accidentally posted a spoiler on our website, and I didn't mean to. I didn't know that I was, but I did. Of this movie.
Oh, wow.
So every episode that we post on nerdcriticpodcast.com, I put a GIF, right? Uh-huh. So it's like the block, instead of a picture, it's a GIF. And for our Rian Johnson episode, I did a GIF. It was the only GIF of Rian Johnson that I could find, but it was a GIF of him holding a knife. He holds it up. He turns to the guy sitting next to him, and he stabs him with it, and he shows that it's a fake knife. After going to see this movie, I go back, and I see that GIF, and I'm like, oh, I had no idea!
The best thing about that, though, is that it's not a spoiler unless you know the context.
That's true!
So
people that haven't seen it, that are still listening, don't know what I'm talking about.
Fantastic moment. Also, this is one of those things about Rian Johnson. He knows what he can get away with. He always knows what he can get away with.
I don't understand how, though.
Examples. Well, let's say, I'm gonna give two examples, and maybe there will be more, but at least two.
I'll add a third.
Okay, here's the first example, the knife. The fake knife. The trick knife with the blade that goes in.
Yeah.
Was not set up. Was not set up anywhere. Like, it was just like there was a chair of knives, like a Game of Thrones almost, Iron Throne type, mosaic of knives in the room that they spent so much time in. And
there was a line of dialogue.
And what was the line of dialogue?
There was a line where Christopher Plummer is talking about Ransom, saying that he's so confused. He's got, like, in life, he doesn't know what's going on to the point that he can't tell a real knife from a fake one.
Oh, okay. Well, that's pretty great. I didn't catch that. It's a good catch, CJ. It's a good catch.
Thank you.
My neck was probably hurting so much that there was a ringing in my ears at that point. But anyway, I'm not good. I don't have a great, this is why I always bring a notebook when I go to the movies, because I have a terrible memory.
Yeah.
But that moment, it wasn't set up. It was set up well enough, though. I mean, because if you got that line,
I did.
So good. That's such a, but it wasn't obviously set up. This is not a moment that was earned with like a triplicate kind of, you know, which most of the time the final turn, which is, you know, in this case, the Ransom, the Chris Evans character, deciding, well, F it, I'm going to kill her.
Yeah.
And then grabbing a knife off of the out of the many knives that we've seen the whole movie, grabbing a knife and trying to stab her, and you finding out in that wonderful close-up shot as he lifts it up.
So good.
That it's a fake knife. And
that, and then he just, yep. Just a couple more times. So good.
And Rian Johnson knowing that he can get away with that.
Yeah.
Like, knowing he can get away with that because it's such a... I don't know. There's lots of reasons. Well, one of the reasons is because the climax has already come and gone.
Yeah.
And the climax is really good, and it's really satisfying.
Yeah, you're satisfied at that point.
Exactly. Yeah. And we don't really believe at that point that he's going that her character, that Marta, is going to die. Like, we don't believe that she's going to get killed at that point. And so it's fine that that's a joke, like a sort of slow motion, self aware winking, the whole thing.
From the moment
where he decides, well, I'm going to kill you now, to it being a fake knife. That whole thing is a joke. It's just a series of punchlines. Anyway, so that. And then the other thing, that totally different category of thing, the donut monologue.
Oh, that was the one I was going to bring up.
Oh, yeah. No, that's my number two. Well, actually, it's my number one.
Yeah.
It's just that we started talking about the fake knife. But my number one is that this man knows how much of a donut monologue we'll accept when it's coming from Daniel Craig with a Southern accent.
That's what's weird, though, is that the answer to that should be none. I shouldn't have a donut monologue that I like, but he just kept going, and I was on board the entire time.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was hilarious, so funny. And it made sense, and I was following his manic energy, and it was great.
Oh, my gosh. Great. It's really, it's this sense of what's available when working with an actor, when working with a script, when working with a character, what is possible, like what the potential of that scene is, what the potential of that joke is, and then digging all the way down to the roots and giving us the whole thing.
To the center.
It's not to the center.
I mean, it was right there.
It was so good.
It was really
good.
My
wife commented, she said, I loved how into it Daniel Craig was. Like how much he loved that metaphor. Yeah. How much he was enjoying just every single fragment of it. And like just
and the totally, Southern accent makes it even better.
Totally shamelessly, unabashedly, just like it's just so great.
That was actually one of my notes when I talked to my wife as we left, was like, that donut, the whole donut analogy should not have worked.
No.
There was no excuse in filmmaking that makes that okay, but it worked out great. It's true. So I don't have a third because that was the one I was gonna bring up. I do want to bring up some of the setup and payoffs.
I actually do have a third.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It just occurred to me as I was thinking about one of the other characters. When we have Don Johnson playing Richard Drisdale, the husband of one of Thrombey's daughters, and his character is this. So he's a Trump supporter.
Just jumping right in.
Here's what I love about that whole scene. Okay, so they're in a family, you know, gathering or whatever. And at the funeral, or is it it's the flashback to the party like before or whatever. Anyway, to the birthday party.
Yeah,
they're all talking. He's talking about immigrants, you know? So, okay, first of all, we've got Don Johnson playing a relatively likable but fairly typical rich white guy.
Totally,
right? And then we've got Toni Collette playing the sort of insufferable liberal, you know? Right? Like, it's the worst sides of both sides of the fence.
Yeah.
And the reason that Rian Johnson is able to get away with a conversation that all of us have heard so many times in our own families and in our own friend circles and on the radio and on TV and every freaking where, and Rian Johnson just puts it into the movie and says, and he gets every single one of the lines that we've heard over and over again. Yeah. I have no problem with immigrants coming to this country legally. And, like, that immigrants, we get the job done, am I right? Like, that whole, I mean, Like every reference, and it was just, and so this thing is happening, and then you get the other side of the fence. You know, you get Toni Collette like playing the advocate for the sort of lefty bleeding heart, but they're both insufferable.
Yeah,
and that's why he gets away with it, is because he's showing us the worst of what we are, and then he's dragging in Marta, who is the heart and soul of this movie, dragging her into the middle of it as the token brown. Oh, by the way. Nobody knowing where she's from.
Oh, great.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Brazil, Paraguay, Ecuador. Ecuador. Like, oh my God. They all just assume, they all just guess. Like they just pull
it
a name
really
out.
Matter to them. Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah.
It's,
yeah.
Oh my gosh. It's so good. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Continue.
I'm going to come back to that later.
Okay.
When we talk about theme, but I want to bring up,
way more to talk about there.
I want to bring up some of the setups and the payoffs. Okay, some of the ones that that signify how well written this movie was. So one of them that I was going to bring up was actually the fake knife thing. There's several more of those. For example, one of the first lines in the movie is Jamie Lee Curtis's character Linda talking to the detectives and saying, yeah, my father and I have a secret way of communicating, you could say. One of the first things that's said in the movie, to flash all the way through the movie to one of the last things in the movie, is Linda finding a note and heating it up, and there's invisible ink that tells her that her husband is cheating on her.
Yep.
You set it up at the, like, one of the first things to one of the last. The entire movie we go through. And then there was, there was another one. There was another one. I'll come back to it. But there were so many moments in this movie that even if they weren't, like, I was so satisfied with how the movie had gone, even if they weren't, like, wrapped up, I would have probably forgotten about them and not cared. For example, the note, the blank note of Christopher Plummer's character saying, I know that you're cheating on my daughter and I'm going to give her this note today.
Yeah.
They could have left that and I probably wouldn't have, like, it was just like a red herring of trying to say that the husband killed him.
Yeah, absolutely.
But no, he does. But that's not what Rian Johnson does. He doesn't do that. Every single thing was paid off, even to the point that, like, when Daniel Craig, what's his name? The Blanc, right?
Yeah.
Blanc.
Yeah.
So when Blanc is doing his whole explaining of the plot and everything that Ransom had done, I was satisfied with everything that had to do with the grandpa, with Christopher Plummer. Harlan, that's right, with Harlan. We could have stopped there and I would have been completely happy. And that's when Ransom says, this is all conjecture. You don't have any proof. And then Daniel Craig keeps going and talks about the maid and the records that she found and the sending it to him and everything. It was icing on top of the cake for me. I had eaten the cake and I was perfectly satisfied with the cake. But then there was like four more courses of desserts that were coming my way that were so amazingly satisfying. I walked away, it was so rich with just great story. I loved it. That was all.
I love it. I love that. That you're absolutely right about the setups and the payoffs. It is something that I'm not sure I know of anybody who does it better than Rian Johnson right now. Just in get like the, you know, and I don't know that Star Wars The Last Jedi is not the best example of this because it's trying to do like a ridiculous number of things. And it's not like his movie as much as like all the other movies that he's done are his movies. But in all of the movies that are not Star Wars The Last Jedi, every single moment ties perfectly to another moment in the movie. Like there are no loose ends at all.
Mm-hmm.
It all the way down to, you know, we talked a lot about Looper and how at the very end of Looper, like the climactic moment has been so well set up that it knocks you down. It's the most, it's the most stunning, like, climactic reveal / payoff that you've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like a time travel, you know, situation. And, you know, Knives Out, same thing. Every single thing matters to the characters. Like, every single one of those characters is rounded out and polished off. So that at the end of the movie, there are no moments that feel stray.
Yeah.
There's nothing that feels like it didn't belong. And there's nothing that feels like if you didn't pull it out, the movie would kind of fall apart a little bit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It all works and fits. It all works.
There were, about halfway through the movie, I was thinking, like, hey, this Blanc guy is just getting lucky the whole time.
Yes.
Right? I was like, he's kind of a schmuck. And that kind of character can absolutely be written into a movie.
Absolutely.
Like, something that everything just falls into place, and he's, like, apparently brilliant, but, like, everything just kind of came to him. There was the setup of the blood spot on the shoe.
Yes.
That I thought just was another red herring. Just kind of, it was gone. And I would have been perfectly okay with that.
Yeah. Well, okay, so let's just talk about the way that this story goes, because one of the things I want to nerd out about the most is Mr. Daniel Craig, who just was wonderful from start to finish of this movie. And the thing that I love the most about him or his character, the way his character was written, and the way obviously he performed the character, and he gave life to the character that Rian Johnson wrote. But it was a perfectly constructed character to fool you until very close to the end. And so in the beginning, he's set up as like the sort of – we've seen this character before. He's the brilliant detective.
He's Sherlock Holmes.
He's Sherlock Holmes with a southern accent.
Yeah.
Like, that's what he is, 100% every inch the Sherlock Holmes. But then we see the actual hero of the movie, Martha, failing to cover her tracks. Like, well, okay. Sorry. Well, okay. Sorry. So when we get to Martha's version of the story, there's so much that I want to nerd out about, CJ. I'm having a really hard time here. This is really hard.
Start with Daniel Craig's character.
But it's all tied together.
Yeah, I know.
The fact that we're sold a character in Martha who throws up when she lies.
Yeah.
By the way, how dare you make a mystery movie where one of the people
cannot lie.
Yeah. The person who knows the most things and is directly questioned by the detective can't lie without throwing up. What an absurd challenge to give yourself. What a way to paint yourself into a corner.
Yeah, it's not the person who knows the most. It's literally the killer.
The killer
cannot lie.
Like, in her own mind, she killed him. And within the first 20 minutes of the movie, we know.
Yeah.
We know the whole thing.
Which was also a very, very, very unexpected.
Yes.
Like, I was like, that's it. I can leave now. But there's so much more to unpack.
And so, so we know from very early on. Watch Rian Johnson paint himself into a corner and then just apparate out of the room. Anyway, the guy just knows how to handle this stuff. So he also knows what the expectations are so thoroughly that he can subvert them perfectly. So you know that the way that this movie is supposed to go is that you get little bits and pieces of the story until you finally start to piece together the whole picture and you're like, oh, that's what happened. But instead, he gives you the whole story up front, or at least so much of it that you feel like it's the whole story, and then you get to watch him sort of backtrack, and the pleasure of it is in, for a lot of the movie, the pleasure of it is in watching him, the Blanc, try to figure out what we feel like we already know.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. And so the fun and a lot of the fun and games of the second act is Martha, like, trying not to lie while not letting Blanc figure out, like, well, cover the one of the most perfect shots, right? Like, her chucking the piece of what is it?
Like the broken wood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just chucking it away from herself when his back is turned. Yeah. Amazing. And then later the dog comes back with it and Blanc finds it. And like those little moments but in the meantime, of course, new pieces of information that surprise Martha, you know?
Yeah.
And it just goes on and on. And anyway, the reason I was talking about Blanc is that we get this character who set up perfectly as the Sherlock Holmes of the Southern drawl. And then little by little, we start to suspect that maybe he's actually an idiot because right in front of him is the killer who can't lie and is evidence everywhere. Like the fact that the tape shows her, like she forgot if she was supposed to turn off the road before or after. And the tape clearly shows that she stopped and got out and ran back. And the only reason they don't see it is because she manages to erase it with a magnet. So we're in the process of being really impressed by how smart Marta is. We're thinking this blonde guy can't be all that good, right? And then at the very end, I'll shut up here, but the thing that I've been trying to laboriously and nerdily trying to get to is at the very end, when he's sitting across from her again in like a mirror of the first shot of them interviewing, and her saying, when did you suspect? And him just like tapping her shoe with his foot. Like him just tapping her foot with his foot. Like it's a very affectionate, intimate gesture. And he just says, from the moment you walked in the door. And you know, at the moment she walked in the door, he saw the blood on her shoe.
Yeah.
And every moment after that was him playing everyone.
Yeah.
Like to get the whole story, to get the perfect story, to understand. And in that moment, you know, oh, not only is he clever enough to spot these little pieces of evidence, but he's so clever that he can sell everyone on the idea that he doesn't actually know what's going on.
Yeah.
It's so good, CJ.
It's so good.
Anyway.
The idea of within, you know, half an hour, you know who killed the guy, right? It's like you're entering Clue, but they show you the end at the end of the first first act of the movie.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, wait. Now, I don't know what journey I'm on anymore. Like, you don't know what kind of movie this is anymore. And it continues forward. And I was like, and my first thought was like, oh, cool. Like, it's going to show us, like, you know, maybe not all murderers are bad people. Like, I don't know. Like, it's going to let us be sympathetic to the murderer, I guess, because she did it on accident. I was like, that's kind of fun, I guess. So I was like trying really hard, and then there the comedy, like with Marta trying to cover up her own tracks and like her throwing, she's playing fetch with the dog with this piece of evidence that could tie her to a murder, right? Yes. It's very much making light of a terrible situation.
Walking over her tracks.
Yeah. In the what? Mud, oh, like, I know. Oh, I can't hear. I can't hear. What?
And Blog's like, oh, just, man. Shoot. Knowing. And in the moment, you know, he knew at that point. He knew.
Yeah, he knew. Yeah. And then to be taken on the journey where Chris Evans was what a great casting, because you see Chris Evans and he plays the character really well. Like, he's kind of a sleazeball, but like he could go, especially when he goes and picks her up. Like, hey, your car won't start. Come get in my car.
Yeah.
He kind of plays that like, oh, he could like be maybe a love interest and like a good hero. Yeah. It's Chris Evans. I mean,
I'd follow you anywhere.
Exactly.
Where's your shield? Do you need me to go get it for you?
I did.
Where'd you leave it? I got a car.
I did say, I leaned over to my wife about halfway through and I was like, I'm having a hard time not seeing Captain America. It's fine though. Yeah. He'll do plenty. To be able to go on this journey and then like, The biggest tell for me that I started to put together like something isn't right is when they do the car chase the whole car chase, and then Daniel Craig gets out of the car and says, that was the stupidest car chase ever.
That's so funny.
It's amazing.
It's a car chase that like, It's not a car.
You're in like a little Toyota Yaris or something.
You're just going to lose.
Yeah.
They're going to get you. Terrible. And it's like she kind of thinks she's won. She's like, okay, now we can get. And she's just like knocking on her window. Like, what are we? Can you please get out of the car now?
Like, why did it take so long to get here? And then for them to arrest him.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that's the most obvious she has been guilty this entire time. And I mean, I was hooked way before then, but that's when like, you know, that was the beginning of the third act that everything gets revealed. And it was paced perfectly well. The comedy nearly always landed. The old aunt lady was just a character, like, I want to draw her. I want somebody to make a, like, sketch her for me, and I can put it up in my house. She's just adorable looking, and it's just all, it fit tonally. It just, everything was great. I was really happy with it. Another setup and payoff where it was where the maid keeps her pot.
Yeah,
because who's going to open a clock?
Yep.
They were just
the use of the clever use of the word stash. I stashed it, and you know, she was like,
I got nothing.
Well,
I'm looking at you all, like, confused.
Where's your, like, calling the place where she keeps her pot her stash of marijuana? Mm. But then, like, later when referring to the copy of the document, she's talking about stashing it. And yeah, so that's what, like, cues, like, oh, it's in the stash.
Oh.
That's why she knew where it was.
Stash.
Yeah. Mm. By the way, also that shot as Marta was, like, about to confess her murder to the whole family,
yeah,
and renounce the will. And in the background, Daniel Craig is opening up the document. like the in the background, the blurred out, the out of focus background, yeah. He's like just casually kind of like sitting down and like opening this thing up. And at that point, you still don't know. You still think that he may be an idiot. And then he comes in and he's like, not an idiot, but like nowhere near as clever as he thinks he is. And then he comes in and he's like, oh, hang on a minute here. He's got, anyway,
it's great. Yeah, he does great. Okay, so... Let's talk about theme a little bit, because this is a fascinating one where I've actually read a couple places that it felt a little heavy-handed.
Sure.
For some people.
I
didn't feel that way at all.
I'm gosh, man. I feel like it would be actually easy for me to get emotional if we start talking about this.
Really?
Yeah.
So, well, then please do. I want to know specifically what kind of themes popped out to you.
Okay. Well, there's clearly a there are moral character qualities and immoral character qualities in this movie, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
We've got the self-made person, right? Or the person who made his own thing and became rich and famous based on his own talents and, you know, worked really hard.
The old man, Harlan. Yeah,
Christopher Plummer Harlan Thrombey. Then we've got his children, who sort of are an array of people who have become dependent on him in some way or another, with the exception of Jamie Lee Curtis. Jamie Lee Curtis being the only one who, in her words, went out and, you know...
With a million dollar loan. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but also all of them are corrupted in some way by having essentially things given to them, and therefore not having had the opportunity to prove their own worth and their own abilities. There's a strong indictment of entitlement here, and that pairs, I think, quite nicely with the fairly, I think probably what people have thought about being heavy-handed. It's not an allegory, it's not a metaphor, it's literally a representation of the working class immigrant versus the established native citizen of this country.
Yeah.
And what that means and how that feels and what that does. And the fact that, so there's a lot to unpack here, and we're not going to get to all of it. We're not even going to get to probably most of it, but we're going to try to hit some important beats. So Marta represents the immigrant class.
Yeah.
Obviously. She's an in-home nurse who probably doesn't get paid a ton, and she's treated basically like a servant by the family.
And is literally from, in their minds, from several different countries.
She's from countries that we associate with immigrating here.
Yep.
The Latino, the brown peoples, mm-hmm. the Latinate countries who send their impoverished, needy people to us to absorb our resources.
Yeah.
You know? So there's a hot debate about immigration going on in this country. And on the extreme right, there's almost like a Red Scare feel, right? Like there's a demonization of immigration. Honestly, at this point, like, I'm not going to bother trying to be, like, diplomatic here. Like, Donald Trump has said a lot of stuff about immigrants that has been sort of incendiary, and I think has caused a lot of people has shifted the popular opinion on the right to be far more antagonistic toward immigrants than they were before Donald Trump, and stoked existing antagonisms to a much higher degree. And so we get the idea that anyone who gets to this country illegally is dangerous and evil in some way.
Fueled the fire quite a bit.
Absolutely. So illegal immigrants are the villain, according to a lot of people on the right. And then on the left, you have a lot of people who talk a lot about how important immigrants are and how important, you know, and how we need to make sure social services are available for everyone and blah, 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 but then don't end up doing very much to actually help those people. So this movie is kind of an indictment of both sides of the political divide that fail to recognize and actually embrace or help the immigrant working class.
Yeah.
Which is a big deal.
There was even a sense of where Michael Shannon's character goes and says, "Hey, we're gonna take care of you. There was almost a sense of I don't even know really how to articulate it, but it's this kind of an entitled pride.
It's a condescension.
It's not what he's saying is not for her. It's for him.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's an excellent point, CJ. Excellent point.
So we've talked a lot about if we're ever going to talk about religion or politics on this podcast, and it's come down to us saying, well, if it's ever applicable to the movie that we see, then yes, we will.
In this case,
I left this movie and I was like, this might be the first time that it's directly applicable to the movie that we watched, because the heavy-handedness comes with them not knowing what country she's from. She's essentially like a perfect person.
She's fairly saintly.
Yeah. She's pretty saintly. Yep. And then the big old heavy-handed slap in the face of her sipping the coffee mug at the end, and the only thing that the only words
that are visible are my house.
Yeah. While the rest, she's literally standing above them in the house
as they are all.
They
now,
look down. Yeah,
they no longer belong there.
Yeah, there's that. I see why people are saying that it's heavy-handed, but this is one of the reasons. I will probably continually point to Knives Out as like one of the reasons I love storytelling so much, because this was a fun comedy, drama, murder mystery, whodunit movie that I can watch 100 times and enjoy every time. That also had this commentary, this very aware commentary that presented something to you that you could not ignore. The heavy-handedness makes it so you can't look past it, and you can't say like, "Hey, this movie wasn't trying to say that," because it was fairly obvious, and makes us have a conversation that we should have. And I love that Rian Johnson made a movie that has that ability, because it's a good movie. Theme or not, it is a good, well-made, well-acted movie, and well-told story. And so, the messages of you have, so the two sides, the far right are Don Johnson's character, the far left is Toni Collette, her character. And so when you look at
Joni Thrombey and Richard Drisdale.
Yes. So you have Richard's character who is talking about, literally talks to...
Which, not for nothing, but the nickname of Richard is Dick.
Is Dick, yeah, not for nothing. So Dick was talking about, like, he brings Marta in, first of all, says that you're from this country that she's not from, but, you know, you came here legally, like, your family came here legally.
You did it the right way.
First of all, her mom, we know from the beginning that her mom... Is an illegal immigrant. Yeah. And so he's already wrong there. And then he, like, the way that he goes about continuing the conversation about, like, they need to work hard, you know, she did it the right way, she's a great person, and doesn't even look at her as he hands her his plate to take when that's not her job. She is a caretaker for the old man. She is a registered nurse. She is not the maid. Okay. So there's that little exclamation point. And then on the other side, you have this woman that is just a leech, that is widowed of the son of this man, who isn't even actually related to anybody.
Double dipping on her daughter's tuition.
Double dipping and claiming, oh no, we need to give
$100,000 a year,
and
claiming to be broke by the end,
and not like helping nobody. Yeah, helping nobody nothing but herself. Yep. And like, and literally, if that gets cut off, like the her daughter's not going to college. But she's been double dipping for 4 years, yeah. I think they say.
Yeah.
And like, so she's done nothing productive with that money at all. And so you have Dick on one side, you have this terrible mother on the other side, and what Ryan
Dick,
Johnson
also married into the family.
Also married into the family.
Whose wife is the one who built a business, yes, based on the investment from her father. And then
and he's just terrified to leave,
yeah,
they say.
Yeah.
Anyway, I love that there's like the extreme of both sides, and then,
that might as well be the same in terms of how it affects
totally,
her.
Yeah. Totally. It doesn't like, yeah. Anyway, I love that we're presented these two just terrible. And then the people that are actually in the family are for just entitled, like, so in my opinion, entitled, like, might be one of the biggest plagues in society,
oh, yeah,
right now.
Entitlement, yeah.
Entitlement. And I've noticed in my life, any time that I've hit, like, a major roadblock, the reason I see it as a roadblock is because I'm entitled.
Yeah, because you're like, well, no,
it should be this way.
It should be.
And if I didn't have that entitlement, that roadblock wouldn't exist. Yeah. It would just be another event in life that, yeah, I'm moving forward to.
Yeah.
And so I've been
task to cross off,
exactly,
your list.
Yeah. Yeah. But because it's supposed to happen some way,
yeah,
it's now this roadblock. So I love, I'll end my rant here with saying, I love that Rian Johnson, as a skilled storyteller, told a story like this.
Yes.
And that it was so much fun along the way.
Absolutely.
That's so difficult to do.
Absolutely. I'm with you, man. I'm with you. I'm really hesitant to say how I really feel.
Sure.
At this point. Because how I really feel is, I don't have really any patience for the people, many of whom are close friends of mine and family members.
Yeah.
Who are really intolerant when it comes to immigrants. Like, really intolerant.
Yeah.
And like, and it's political indoctrination for the most part. It's what they've heard from people that they admire, and it's what they've been talking about amongst themselves. It's a story that they've been told that is false. And the story is that illegal immigrants, because let's just set aside the legal immigrants that everybody's okay with, sure, because by the way, that's nearly impossible.
Yeah.
I had a friend in college who was from Brazil. He was brilliant. He was hardworking. He was from a good family. His parents, I believe, had the green cards or whatever. Could not get his citizenship.
Not to mention, this was what, 10 years ago?
This was 10 years ago. Yeah. Yeah.
It's
this
even
was
harder
even, yeah,
now.
Yeah. Even harder. Anyway, so it is not easy. It is not even, like, most of the time, it's not even possible for people to come to this country legally. So to flippantly say, well, yeah, no, we want to welcome everybody, but legally, is a bald-faced, denial of the actual problem, which is that it's almost impossible to get to this country legally anymore. So setting that aside, so let's not even talk about legal immigrants, which everyone's fine with. Let's talk about illegal immigrants. The story that people have been sold, especially on the right, but also surprising numbers of people on the left, the story is that illegal immigrants are dangerous. Economically dangerous, criminally dangerous,
yeah,
socially dangerous, culturally dangerous. They won't learn our language. They won't, you know, blah. Like, I have no patience for this.
Yeah.
Our whole country is built on those people. Our whole country, everybody, every single person that lives here is either a first, second, third, or fifth generation immigrant. Everybody. And so for you to say they have to, they ha- like to take the us versus them entitled mentality of like that they're somehow this dirtier, lesser, like undeserving, whatever, like attach whatever negative. It is I'm sorry, that's criminally false. And the fact that so many people have bought the story, I can't blame everyone for buying a story, because when a story is told often enough by enough people, people are going to believe it.
Yeah.
But it's wrong. And the reason I one of the reasons I love this movie so much is because it's kind of a slap in the face to that story. It's like, here's an alternative story. And the alternative story is that the person who comes here with a willingness to work really hard, no matter how they get here, but to work really hard, to take care of the people that they love, to treat people well, and to be kind, like, that person is going to end up owning your house. And they should.
Yeah.
Like, that person deserves the house.
Yeah.
That person deserves to live here. That person deserves everything that this country has to offer. Everything. Everything. No exceptions. And so, I love, like, that last shot, and speaking of which, this relationship, and I think particularly encapsulated by the Michael Shannon character, say first pulling Marta aside and saying, "We're going to take care of you. Don't worry." You know, before everyone learns that, oh, it, actually, she's going to inherit everything.
Yeah.
But before that, he makes that offer, and then after, he goes to her house,
threatens her,
and threatens her basically, but tries to follow it up saying, no, but we would protect you. We would protect you and your mother with our vast resources and connections. And she and her, terrified of everything, but having the presence of mind to basically say, "You're ridiculous," saying, "Oh."
They're my resources, yours.
You're talking about all those resources. Those are actually my resources.
Yeah.
It's very good. Thank you for letting me know that all the resources that I now have, I can use to save my mother.
Yeah.
That's great to know. Thanks and goodbye. And shuts the door. I loved that scene because it was so close and claustrophobic and threatening. And then the power shift in that scene was just, oh my gosh, delicious.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And so I do want to recognize that we are two white dudes who were born and raised in this country.
Absolutely.
And so I don't want to like speak out of turn or anything, but obviously there are opinions, and the reason that this movie landed so well for me was that the underlying theme and message was from Daniel Craig's character, who saw literally blood on that person and didn't jump to conclusions and didn't assume just because of that one thing or just because how you look means that you're a bad person, but I'm going to see this situation as a whole. And then the message being that the reason that you get this house and the reason that you won this old man over is because you have a good heart.
Yeah.
I know you won't do bad because you had a good heart. And so the people that were entitled with not as good of a heart did not end up with the thing that they wanted. And the person who had a good heart, that's it. That was like the underlying theme of have a good heart. Doesn't matter who you are. Doesn't matter where you're from. Doesn't matter in any of that. Just have a good heart and be a good person, and you'll deserve that house.
Yeah. So couple things. The biggest pieces of evidence that Blanc gathered upon entering the scene. I'm sure you remember at the very beginning, before you are officially introduced to him, he's just playing a key on the piano.
Yeah.
And he hits it. He punctuates certain things. Do you remember like what he was punctuating?
I assumed it was lies.
It was. So I think, yes, I don't remember specifically. This is a movie that I've only seen once so far, and I'm going to be going back and watching it again and again.
Me too.
what stood out to me was that he would hit the key sort of at the moment that they said something that was absurd, basically. And if you go, I suspect, and I'm excited to go back and watch and see if this is true, but I suspect that he hits that key basically at the point that they reveal their actual nature. Like that, like, oh, this is the real you.
Yeah.
Like this is the this lie that you've told, or this assumption you've made, or this whatever. Like this reveals who you are. Now I know who you are. And that is the most important thing that I have going forward, because everything that he's looking for from that point forward, he fits within that context. Does this thing that I'm looking at, how does this make sense in light of the fact that I know this about this person?
Yeah.
And like, this is interesting because it's doing the opposite of what we consider stereotyping, right? Stereotyping is looking at somebody's skin or listening to their accent and saying, well, therefore I know these things about you.
Mm-hmm.
He is looking at the quality of their character. He's saying, based on what you are saying, based on the claims you are making, that's how I know who you are. It's not about what you look like. It's not about where you're from. It's not about what your job is. It's about the claims you are making.
Mm-hmm.
That's what reveals you. And that is the operating character assumption that I'm using to solve this case. That's what Blanc is doing. The last thing I want to say about this is that Blanc is a white dude with a southern accent.
Yeah.
I love that so much because it's basically saying, I mean, and like you said, him coming in and looking at Marta and the assumption that he makes, not the assumption, but the conclusion or the operating assumption he uses about her is about her claims and about her character, about what he discovers about who she is the very, very beginning or very early on. And so seeing that she's brown, hearing that she has an accent, seeing blood on her shoe, all of those things seem to say,
she did it.
She did it.
Yeah.
If you were doing the stereotyping, if you were believing the story that immigrants are inherently dangerous,
yeah,
then obviously she's a criminal and has something to hide and needs to be gotten rid of.
And he would have found evidence and he would have been, quote unquote, right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it would have... So what you were saying earlier about how you love that this movie is so fun to watch and it's such a good film, it's such a good story, and also there's this great theme, the two are inextricably tied.
Yeah.
This is a story about, like, that if you remove those elements, it wouldn't work anymore. Like, that. This is what's making the story run. This is the fuel for that engine. It's a beautifully built engine, but the fuel is the characters, who they are, and why they're doing the things that they're doing,
yeah.
And why that actually is so impressive and fresh and exhilarating is because of our current context.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I mean, there is a lot more to say about this movie, but I think we're about there, about at our time limit.
CJ's hoping to rescue you from any more of my political ranting.
No, not at all. I'm very much into this conversation, and I'm glad that there is a movie that is, forcing us or encouraging us to have this conversation. I just that we do have a schedule to keep, if you will. So I'm going to start to segue into the ending of the episode.
Oh, this is good. It's well handled,
thank
CJ.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I don't have any announcements for today other than that Star Wars is coming.
Yes.
P.S. By the way, Star Wars is coming, and we're gonna do 3 episodes on Star Wars. It's going to be Star Wars, The Force Awakens, Star Wars, The Last Jedi, and then Star Wars, Rise of Skywalker, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday of that week.
Yes.
Of the week of the release of Star Wars.
Yes.
Rise of Skywalker.
It's going to be amazing.
It's going to be a great, great week.
We ask you that you share this. Share this episode specifically with somebody who is that you know that has seen Knives Out. Whether they liked it or not, they probably did. But if they didn't, share this with them to convince them to do so. And then you start thinking about all them Star Wars nerds that you know. Because I know you know Star Wars nerds.
They're thick on the ground.
They're just all over the place. Get excited for that Star Wars week because it'll be a good one.
Many of them are white people with strong opinions about immigration.
And
like yours truly.
And great beards. Great beards.
Oh my gosh. All right. I thank you, Michael Bonmiller, for this outro music. And Michael, send us your opinions about Knives Out. and we'll share them.
Oh, the last thing. Oh, I'm sorry. You already thanked Michael Baumeller. I'm sorry.
But go ahead. It's fine. I'll thank him again.
We have a listener who sent in an audio clip.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is we're going to publish that audio clip because it's 6 minutes or nearly 6 minutes.
Yeah. So what we're going to do is we're going to give the whole thing, or most of it at least, after we, you know, listen to it and make sure there's no swears. And we're going to give the whole thing to our premium subscribers.
Yes, we are.
Indeed. And we're going to just play a little snippet of it for you here right now.
I just saw Miles Out last night. I really enjoyed it. All the performances were great. As you guys would say, they were bonkers. And this movie was just delightful. The one thing I wanted to talk about the most is that this movie was made in a way to make you think you were going into your typical murder mystery. It's a big mansion. There's some cops investigating people. The rich old guy died. All his children are left. And they're all... oh my gosh, you think one of us could have done it? And then you find out through the interviews that all of them have motive and everything's just going the way it goes. And then you hear like a piano note and then the people in the movie realize Daniel Craig's sitting back there. And then the people in the theater realize, oh yeah, Daniel Craig's in this movie. They were slowly interrupting the regular process of a murder mystery. With Daniel Craig's character as they're doing these interviews. He's just kind of chilling in the back. He's paying attention to everything. And he's interrupting the flow. He'll play this piano key and he does it to each person in their interviews. As it starts to veer away from your typical murder mystery movie.
Was that it? Did it play?
Yeah, it played. Nice. It was good.
It was good.
I loved it.
That was...
And you'll love the whole thing, too, if you become a premium subscriber. How do you like that ad?
So now we can thank Michael Bunger
yes, for the outro. Yes, now it is appropriate to thank him for the outro music.
We can also have people remember to love movies like a nerd and respect them like a critic.
And cut.